Hello, Leicester, and welcome to another day on planet Earth at your conference. They organised it and you came. They couldn't be more grateful and relieved.
The session is entitled Content is King, a title that I have blatantly and unashamedly pilfered from you. Can you just unpack that for us? What you mean by content is king?
I don't know what I mean by that.
What do I mean by that?
Content is king because it makes everything easier and it makes you sound better and it's a better listen. Because it's very difficult to be funny or interested or interesting about very little. And if you have some content, it gives you a path to walk down and then to stray from and then to get back to if you're lost. It also often gives you passion and energy, because content will have energy of some sort, whether it's information or whether it's skill or whether it's intrigue or excitement or mystery. And so already you're tapping into this bundle of fun and this bundle of connections, and then you can do with it what you will. And I think being on the radio every day and being in the entertainment business every day, even if you're, for example, a weather reporter or a newsreader or a travel reporter, it's about telling the story. You've got to tell a story. And all stories have content. You know, they always have a subject and a theme. And if you hear Moira read the news on our programme, she doesn't read the news. She tells you the news. She tells you the story of the news. And she thinks about her intonation for the beginning of her bulletin, the headlines. And then she'll think about the austere fashion which the first, usually serious, few stories have to be delivered with. And then she may go lighter and softer if it's an entertainment story. She tells, she interprets it. But there must be something to interpret. And that's the thing. You have to have content. People don't sing about nothing. They sing about something. You know, composers in the 16th, 17th century didn't write about nothing. They wrote about something. You don't think about nothing. You think about something. And therefore, content isn't king, just king. Content is the air in our lungs every day. You know, it's the grey matter in our brains. You know, if you don't do content, if you can pull off anything without content, well, then you're a genius.
It's actually not style over substance. It's actually vice versa, would you say? Or would those two things have to go together for it to be an absolute success?
The weaker the content, the more style you have to have around it, the sneakier way you have to have of selling it. But, you know, you can't be a bit pregnant, you know. A little bit of content is still content. You've still got the seed that you need to grow the field of barley. You know, it's still there, and it's up to you what you do with it. Style shouldn't really ever come before content. It can do, and it does do a lot nowadays, and it's not good. So, like, the way kids' programmes are edited, you know, and music videos are edited, and lots of shows on Discovery Channel are edited. They're edited very quickly now. They don't rest, they don't settle, because it's all about keeping the attention of the viewer. And it does keep your attention, but what it does, because the style comes over the content, is it gives you less of a story. So they're keeping you for longer but telling you less. That's not a good thing. And that frightens me.
Let's talk about something I've heard you mention before, what I call Evan's Sevens. So everything we do on the show, everything we put on the show, has to have seven reasons why it's there.
Evan's Sevens, which I've never heard it called before, but I don't mind it at all. That came from Don't Forget Your Toothbrush. So we're doing a conceit. So we're constructing a conceit. So we're going to hit, not literally, but we're going to jump on a member of the audience. We're going to surprise them with hopefully something that's going to be funny, and everybody's going to win via it in the end. And what I used to say to the production team is, you know, let's try and make this funny seven times over. And so you got seven chances of this working. Now, sometimes if you'd really sorted your bit out, your item out, then you'd hit all seven. But the point is, if you miss six and you hit one, it's still going to be okay. And it's still like that on the radio today. You know, you come off the back of a record, you've already played a great record, so that box is ticked. You know, what are you going to do next? Well, tell the time, bit of information there, or give out something that, you know, you've just had handed to you that may be informative in one way, shape or another. Then have a personal thought, because your personal thought connects you to your listener. And, you know, it's you on having a little one-on-one with them, rhetorical as it may be, and then try and be funny within that, and then just have the next great record ready to for when you run out of things or when you think you've hit an exclamation mark, and off you go again. But it's all about insurance, you know. It's all about insurance. Now, you can insure by editing, but I think that that loses some spontaneity. But there are other ways to underwrite what you're going to do. And the Evans Sevens, as they're now known, apparently, is not a bad way to go about it. It's just sensible, you know. It's like it's back to content again. Content is king, you know. You would be a fool if you didn't have content, and you would be a fool if you didn't try to layer anything you do to give it a chance of succeeding, even if part of it fails.
Let's talk a little bit about working with a producer. Who do you think ultimately has responsibility for the content of a show?
Well, I think it's a Lennon and McCartney situation. You know, I think if you get the right producer, it's a two-way street. There's no net in the middle of the tennis court. You know, it's a hopefully a meeting of minds, of tastes, of creativity, and of osmosis. You know, you can't have a meeting of osmosis, but it's a process of osmosis. And I don't think, I mean, there's a responsibility for certain rules and regulations, which must rest with the producer and the executive producer and the editor and the compliance and editorial policy, whatever. But from a creative point of view and from a flow point of view, I think it's a shared responsibility. And I think, you know, I've been very blessed with the producers that I've worked with. I've never worked with a bad one. I've got a great one at the moment, Mr. Tickle, Andy, and Mr. Worrell, Esquire. And I think that's got to be a team effort. You know, you wouldn't want to not be in the Beatles, would you? Well, let's all be in the Beatles.
Talking about this show specifically and the people that you work with now, what do you think is the best bit of content that we have on The Breakfast Show?
The best bit of content on The Breakfast Show changes on a day-to-day basis, thank heaven. But we have some glorious window frames. So we have some fantastic window frames. They're filled with different stained glass every day. So I can't say. And thank heaven it started. Thank heaven it's evolved into that. You don't know until the listeners tell you so. Or the people you're working with get a reaction. Or you react yourself. And that's another thing that I learned sort of later on in my career. It's all right throwing it out there for the people to listen to. But are you listening to it yourself? So if you are lucky enough in the madness of the free flow of 3 hours every day or whatever it is you're doing on TV or radio or anywhere else to say something that might be funny, then you must remember to react to it yourself. Because why aren't you finding it funny? And that took me years to do. You know, and that is so much more enjoyable to do a show when you enjoy it yourself. Because it's all right to be there for everybody else's enjoyment, but nobody wants to be served by a tense waiter. And it's the same thing. You know, you've really got to... But this takes forever. This veneer of emotion and of motor programs and learning and then motor skills, sorting yourself out and covering up for you when you don't even realise your left hand's, helping out your right hand, literally, on the control console here. I learn things every day. And just talking to you about this, I'm learning things as we're speaking here.
The thing about the window frames that we have on The Breakfast Show is they're all personality-based, whether that's something that you're doing or a personality that I have on the show, whether that's a famous face or a guest of some, wherever we found them from, they're all personality-based. Why do you think personality content is so important?
I don't think content is led by personality. I think it's led by passion. And I think passion is energy. And they're the two things that people plug into. That's what grabs your attention. So if you have a great piece of content, then it's got to be covered, commented on, or delivered by somebody who cares about it. And that's what I think you mean by personality content. You know, also what you're doing there is you're humanising it. And you're putting a face to it. You know, and then people can identify with it. And so I think that's all better. You don't go into a gorgeous old-fashioned sweet shop and want to serve yourself. You want to meet the shop owner. You want him to tell you. You don't want to be led through these things. You don't really get a handful of salt and a handful of pepper and sprinkle it over your dinner. I mean, you can, but most people have salt cellars and, you know, pepper grinders. It's the same thing. We are merely vessels in which to deliver the content. And the more energy that that delivery that Torpedo has, then the more chance the content has of hitting home.
Speaking of delivering content, on a slight side note, if they turned off FM tomorrow, where in our sort of digital realms would you feel best to deliver, whether that's audio content or video content, where if they turned DAB and FM off tomorrow,
DAB as well?
DAB as well.
So we're not on anywhere?
We're not. There's no one. They've removed the antenna.
Well, all around to my house, I would imagine. I've done it before. I don't know. It's a good question, actually. I mean, the whole point of, you know, the whole recent situation with Netflix and Kevin Spacey's House of Cards, £63 million worth of TV drama delivered only on the net, you know, via Netflix. Quite interesting, quite intriguing. You know, listening to the acquisition of Virgin Media yesterday by whomever it was, I can't remember, over in America. And, you know, NTL and TalkTalk and BT. I don't know. I've got a couple of pals who aren't on the radio at the moment who want to be back on the radio. And I can't believe in this modern day of technology that they can't find a way of getting into people's homes. You know, it's going to be, it's a strange one, because where does it leave licenses and where does it leave contracts, you know, and where does it leave radio stations when we can all, well, we can't yet, but if we could all start to broadcast our own thing, you know, I mean, it's bound to happen, but nobody's talking about it really. I mean, we're talking about it now, but nobody seems to have any answers. You know, I can't believe that. Really. I can't believe the fact that we can't get to where we want to be specifically, or maybe we can, and you're going to discover it in the next couple of hours.
Who knows? Let's talk about 500 words, just very briefly. A great piece of, a great idea, which has turned into all this content on lots of different platforms. Just explain for us a little bit about where the idea for 500 words came from, and now where it exists on all these kind of different levels.
500 words came from a story that I either imagined or read or heard about a short story writing competition. And what I think I remembered was, or is, that somebody somewhere wrote to all the greatest authors in the world, Gore Vidal, everyone, who were renowned for writing hundreds and hundreds and thousands of pages in their books, and said, could you, as a storyteller, write a story, a dramatic story, with characters, a theme, with plot and with feeling and a twist in 80 words or less? So their challenge was 80 words or less. And the story that I heard won it was something like, and it's not this, but it's something like this. She asked, could she meet him for one final time on that beach? Nervously, he approached her. She looked up and was about to speak, and he said, no, me first. Please, can I ask, what is it that women want? And she leant towards him and she whispered in his ear, and he ran away screaming. So it came from that. But obviously we gave the kids 500 words, not just the 80.
And now where does that exist on all these different levels? So we have our elements on air. We have all the website things that are going on with the live event that will happen at Hay. Just tell us kind of when you came up with the idea for 500 words, did you imagine it would exist on all these different sort of, not platforms, but levels?
In the old days, if you come up with an idea like 500 words, it might be a writing thing. It might be on the back of a postcard, you know, as it was when I was a kid. You know, you might have a phone issue in there, like when Swap Shop started and another TV, Saturday morning TV programs like that. The great thing now is you come up with what is the sun, and you have all these satellites that start spinning off around it. And it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. And they work in unison with one another. And what you do is you target certain demographics of the population, and depending on what you think, how you think they might want to connect with your idea. Obviously, through schools, it's brilliant to do it via the internet. It's brilliant to do it, you know, on the radio. It's brilliant to talk about it on Blue Peter. It's brilliant to write about it in the Telegraph. You know, it's fantastic because you can say, okay, well, this is obviously a live event. Okay, how do we get people to the live event? Do we need any paper nowadays, you know? Or should we just do all this online? But I'm not an expert in that. But what I'm fascinated by and I'm buoyed by and I really love is the fact that once an idea has been hatched, there are so many ways of now identifying whether it's going to work or not, because things either work immediately now, or they just die a death. You know, and it used to be, we're going to have to wait to see if we get any letters in the postbag. And now it's, well, how many hits have we had in the last 10 minutes online? And you know. And it immediately starts to die or live, which is good either way. Because if it's going to die, we don't want to waste our time on it. And if it's going to live, we say, okay, pour some more petrol onto that fire. We need to get those flames higher. And I think that's a good thing.
How important is that to you on a small day-by-day scale? So obviously 500 words is a huge project, but even just small things like daily content, for example, this morning we were talking about burpees, the workout move. All of a sudden, that's not just an on-air discussion. That's something that's going on Twitter. It's a video on Facebook. How important is that to you on a day-to-day show basis?
I think that if you come up with an idea like we were talking about this morning, where we talked about this mad exercise called the burpee, which has been around for years. It's the hardest exercise in the world, apparently. And we're going to do them live on the show tomorrow. So today, some members of the team were filmed doing it. We put that on Facebook 24 hours before we're going to do it live on the air on the Friday show. And of course, what that gets the fire stoked, doesn't it? You know, that's your tinder, you know, your firelighter. So it starts the conversation already. It's quite interesting. But what things that surround the main idea should never do, and all the different platforms that those that streaming could occur on, which is what it is, they should never take away from the central idea, nor should they hijack the central planet into doing something for the sake of them, which does happen. And you've just folded your arms now because that happens a lot. And I don't think you can feed the fire from outside. You know, once the fire's lit, you can say, okay, well, let's gather around and let's see how we can help keep it going. But it should never be from the outside in. It should always be from the inside out. It's like trying to have a baby outside the body and then forcing it inside for the last day before the 9 months is up. It doesn't make any sense.
The biggest thing you've taught me on that is don't let the tail wag the dog.
Yeah. That's a much better weapon.
The baby thing was a bit gross.
Yeah, sorry.
One final question. Who for you then, either past or present, is the king of content on the radio?
Who's the king of content? I think the natural kings of content on the radio are people who do current affairs programmes, sports programmes, because that's their bread and butter, isn't it? They start with, you know, they look to the world for stories. We do the same thing. You know, I don't think we do badly. I would never say it's us, but we're pretty much up there, I think. But, you know, it's not a clever move. It's just a wise move. And once again, I've got to tell you, if you don't lead with content, you are cruising for a bruising, my friends.